Writers, the Winter Blueprint Challenge 2026 is on. And I can't wait to do it, and I can't wait to tell you about it. Okay, so this time around, we're gonna have two ways to play. First, we'll run the blueprint for supporters. 10 weeks of blueprint assignments, live events, and encouragement starting January 12, 2026. Or, and this is the big news, apply to join our very first blueprint cohort. 10 of you will become a small group that receives direct feedback from me and from Jenny on flap copy and the 3-page inside outline, and joins 5 group-only live sessions, and becomes a part of a members-only community dedicated to helping you create a blueprint that leads you to the book you want to start and finish. Applications to join this group open December 15th, 2025, and will be evaluated on a first-come, first-serve basis. Once we have 10 people, we're going to close down the application, so get yours in early. Early bird pricing for the small cohort is $1,000 until December 22nd. After that, the price goes up to $1,200 if there are even spaces left by then. I am so excited about this, so get your application in early. The regular blueprint will run for supporters at the usual supporter pricing, but this other cohort is going to be really special. Details on how and where to apply are in the show notes, or they're going to be pretty prominently displayed at amwritingpodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Jenny Nash, and you're listening to the Hashtag AmWriting Podcast. This is a Write Big session where I'm bringing you short episodes about the mindset shifts that help you stop playing small and write like it matters. Today, I'm talking to Janet Fox about the decision to buy back the rights to her first novel and reissue in both digital and paperback formats and own her own work in a wholly different way. Janet is one of Author Accelerator's original certified book coaches, and she works with writers of kidlit from picture books through young adult. She's had a long career in writing and publishing that spans more than 25 years and is the author of 13 books for young readers, including The Mystery of Mystic Mountain, which has been chosen for a statewide reading program in Montana for 2026. The book we're talking about today is Faithful, a YA historical romance set in Yellowstone in 1904. Welcome, Janet.
Yeah, hi, Jenny. It's so great to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you about this. It's just such an interesting thing that you're doing. So why don't we start by going back to this first novel that you wrote and how you got it published and how it's lived in the world since then.
Yeah, and this is truly my very first novel, and I wrote it after my mother died, and it's really about a girl who was struggling with dealing with the death of her mother. But I set it in 1904 in Yellowstone, which I know very, very well, and I love doing historical research, so it's historical fiction. I added a layer of romance. I certainly added all the aspects of Yellowstone National Park. And I found my first agent at a critique session when she read the first couple of chapters and then said, I really want this book. And I hadn't finished it yet.
Amazing.
So, yeah. And so I finished it fast and sent it to her. And 3 months later, she signed me as one of her first clients. So, and she sold it to Penguin Puffin.
So was that the critique session at a conference or a workshop?
It was. It was at an SCBWI, Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators conference, which is something I really strongly urge writers to do, is to go to those conferences and seek out those critique sessions, because they can be really, really helpful, and they can even, you know, get you there, which was a shock at the time, but it worked. So
you landed this agent, she got you a book deal at a big traditional house, and that was in early 2000s?
That was in 2008, because the book came out in 2010, and fortunately it was a 2-book deal, so that sort of cemented things for me in terms of having an ongoing career, as it were.
Okay, so you write this book and it comes out, and what happened?
Well, it did very well. It won a couple of awards and got some acclaim. And then, of course, the second book came out. The second book came out in 2011 in June. And you probably won't remember this, but I remember it very well. June of 2011 was sort of the advent of ebooks. It's when ebooks began to explode. And at the same time, major bookseller went out of business. That was I can't remember the name of the bookseller, but it was a
Oh,
big bookstore. Border,
Borders.
and they loved my books, and they returned
Oh.
5,000 copies when they went out of business a month later.
Oh. Oh.
So that kind of killed Forgiven in terms of getting an audience, because my publisher had relied heavily on them. Nevertheless, I went on to sell a third book to Puffin that did very well. But Forgiven went out of print very quickly as a result of this sort of combination of events.
So
And
Faithful was the first book, Forgiven was the
is a
second
second.
that you had contracted with in that original deal. And then that second book goes out of print. Wow.
Really fast. So Faithful stayed in print for quite a long time, while Forgiven went out of print. And about, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 years after it went out of print, I got a letter from the publisher out of the blue saying, "We're going to take it completely out of print. You have the rights." They gave me the rights. Just I didn't even ask for them. They just gave them to me, which I hadn't. I really wasn't sort of cognizant of what that meant at the time. And if you remember in those days, that was still pre full acceptance of self-publishing.
Right.
Self-publishing was still like, not a thing that people had a lot of respect for, especially in kid lit. And this is a YA novel. So I sat on it and sat on it. And then when I watched over the years, as happens, sales of Forgiven and the third book, Sirens, fell away. I had new books coming out, so I wasn't really working on it very well. And they fell away. And I thought, all right, I think I need to get those rights back too. So I went to Authors Guild, which I cannot recommend highly enough that everybody should join the Authors Guild. There's a
Yeah.
whole other segment we could talk about there, but their lawyers, for the price of your annual subscription, their lawyers will do the dirty work for you, and I got my rights back to those books right away. Sat on them, sat on them, sat on them. And then, as I watched, my son is also a writer. He is self-published. His sixth book came out last 2 weeks ago. And so
Amazing.
I know. So I watched his progress. I watched his journey. I could see what he was doing, and I could also see that he's selling books and getting much more per book than I ever have gotten per book for any of my books. And I have these rights, and the books are not on the shelves. They're not in ebook format. They're not in audiobook format. They're nowhere. So about, well, 6 or 8 months ago, I said, I'm going to do something with this, because in the meantime, having gotten to publish more books, I published a middle grade novel, Charmed Children of Rookskill Castle. That was a huge success. It got multiple, I don't know, six, seven starred reviews, awards, sold like crazy, probably sold almost better than anything else has ever sold. And they took it out of print about a year after it earned out. And I thought that was really unfair. I thought, what is it about traditional publishing that they can't keep this book in a backlist? It's selling. I didn't understand that. So I went to my agent and I said, I'd like to get the rights back to Charmed Children. And they kind of fought me on it a little bit. They
The
didn't
agent or the
want
publisher?
publisher. They didn't want to give me those rights back. But they eventually did. And that's when I decided, all right, I've got to bring this book back into print. And while I'm at it, I'm going to bring everything that's out of print back into print. So
Okay, wait,
that's
I want to stop you. I want to stop you because I have so many questions. Okay,
Yeah.
so I have a technical question and then I have a
Yes.
bigger question. So the
Yes.
technical question is, this is coming from a personal situation I have where there's a book that is not being marketed or sold or anything, but they keep the digital link up to say that it's in print and actually sign that contract so long ago that it didn't address digital rights.
Right,
And
right.
so the it's technically in print because they have that digital link up. Did you not have the ebooks for these books were not being sold either? That
No.
okay.
Yeah. They took the books completely out of print and ebooks as well. Now, and audiobooks are totally different. Audiobooks are very hard to get the rights back to because they live forever, but for whatever reason, I was able, maybe it was in my original contract, but I was able to immediately get the ebook and the print book rights back on Forgiven. And then when I went to Authors Guild, they were able to do the same for Faithful and Sirens. So I understand that the ebook is a problem, but that doesn't mean you can't get the print rights back and reissue it in print and then tie it to the ebook, which could,
Right.
potentially result in sales.
So before we go down that rabbit hole, I want to go back to this moment where you think I'm going, have these rights. I'm going to do this. I'm going to bring this out in a whole new way, have a whole new launch, own your work in a whole different way. Having had so many books published through the traditional process and so that's a huge mindset shift. And we're here on this right big session. So I want to dig into what that decision felt like. Was it scary? Was it hard? Was it easy? Were you fueled by, like you mentioned, why is this not in print? Like, were you fueled by a kind of bitterness, or were you fueled by like, I love this book? Like, tell me about the decision. That's the place I'm really interested in.
I'm fueled by the sense of ownership of my own legacy. So, for example,
That's
this is going
beautiful.
to be a little this is going to be a little wonky or a little woo-woo maybe,
I
but
love it.
I had this dream as I'm just starting this process that I want to call my imprint, my press, Owl Fox Press. And it was because in this dream, this owl told me that owl stands for one woman's legacy. This is me taking ownership of the thing I've created. I'm the creator. I want that out there. I want it out there forever. And having that ownership allows me to do that.
Wow. So I mean, I just have to remind people listening, your name is Janet Fox. So in this
Yes.
dream, you had an owl, you said, come to a fox.
Come to me and say, this is, you want this to be Owl Fox Press. So that's what I've named
Wow. Okay, so this that I mean, if that's not a right big moment, I don't know what
it.
is. So this sense. Do you mind my asking how old you are, Janet?
I'm in my 70s, I'll say that.
Okay, perfect. So do you think that impulse or inspiration or whatever we want to call it has anything to do with where you are in your life stage, or am I putting that on it
No,
because of where I am? Okay.
it absolutely has everything to do with it. I've been a creator for 25, 30 years, and I really feel the press of time.
Yeah.
My whole approach to being a creator is I want to go as far as I can, as long as I can, but there is an end out there. And so I want this work that I'm very proud of to live on. I don't, it's when you get to this stage, you see that, and you see that the things that you build, the things that you make, some of them are completely ephemeral and they're going to go away. But some of them are really part of you, and you have to own them. And that's the way I feel about this. So, yeah.
And what does it feel like when you, what did it feel like when you won the rights back? We'll get to how you did it, but what did it feel like when it happened in terms of this is mine now? Like, did you feel that?
Not really, because I wasn't. Again, at that time, even when I went to Authors Guild and got the rights back to Faithful and Sirens, I wasn't really. It still wasn't. I wasn't ready to put it out there to take that next step. I didn't know how to take that next step. I didn't think it would be an acceptable next step. But things have evolved like crazy in the self-publishing marketplace, to the point where a lot of people are getting traditionally published after self-publishing, which was never the case before. They're being discovered by virtue of the fact that they're creating this body of work. And I feel like this is a really brilliant time for someone who is a creator to take ownership and step out of your comfort zone and learn how to do this and do it. Just do it, because it's really such a powerful feeling, honestly.
So traditionally, children's books, young adult, chapter books, picture books, all of that were the worst. Or maybe that's not fair to say. I think had a reputation as being the hardest thing to bring out with self-publishing because you often are not going direct to the reader. There's this
Correct.
intermediary buyer, which is the parent or the school. And so the advice we used to give as book coaches is this is not available or accessible to a children, young reader, writer. That's part of what's changed, right?
Totally changed. And I would say that there is a sort of a level. Picture books are very difficult to self-publish. It can work. And one person who's doing it extremely well is Darcy Patterson. She's brought out a number of picture books. She's making a lot of money self-publishing her picture books, and she's found the avenue to create a book that's both beautiful and solid, so that when it gets in the hands of readers, it's a really nice book. It's not just, a paper copy or a digital copy. And so she has set the avenue for self-published picture book authors. When you work your way up the age range, until you get to middle grade, it is still difficult to self-publish those books because of the gatekeepers, the librarians and teachers and parents who buy the books for children. So starting in middle grade, especially upper middle grade and into YA, that's when kids go to the bookstore and they say, "I want that book." The trick is distribution, getting those books into bookstores, because other in traditional publishing, those books would go through librarians and then get into the schools and get into the hands of readers through people who recommend them to kids to read. So getting them into bookstores is key, and that's one part of the thing that I'm learning. So yeah. Now it is
Wow.
different from adult books, but yeah.
So you mentioned you said that you weren't ready. You could feel you that there was a time when you weren't ready. Was that mental or was that intellectual? Like, I need to learn these technical skills and I don't want to, or I can't, or it's too much. Like, what was the not readiness about?
Partly it was, I think, that there were not a lot of tools available until more recently. So certain programs, applications, freeways have avenues have opened up to self-published authors that were not available until recently. And I think that was part of it. I didn't know where to go. It wasn't until I saw my son start to publish his books that I actually said, "Oh, okay, this isn't so hard. This can be done." And
And
he learned a lot along the way.
does he write for young readers as well?
No, he writes military science fiction very much for adults.
Got it, got it. Okay, so This moment of I'm going to own my own work. Well, now I'm curious because now you have that impulse and the rights to those three books, and you have an agent and a bunch of books traditionally published and things being very much in the traditional publishing machine, if you will, like with the Mystery of Mystic Mountain being this one book read for Montana. Like you've got, it's not all or nothing. You've got a foot in all these different places. How does that feel?
Great. It just feels great. It feels like I have options. It feels like I can, and I love my agent, and we work really well together. We communicate very well. So I sent her a note recently, and I said, I've got this collection of short stories that I've written over many years. I've vetted it with my beta readers. They love it. I love it. But I know short stories, YA short stories are a really tough sell to a traditional publisher. I would like to put it out there, and I don't, you tell me what you would like me to do. Would you like to try and sell it? I haven't heard back from her yet, but I just sent it last week, so I haven't heard back from her as to whether she wants to read these short stories and try to sell it. But I'm going to suspect, given my understanding of the marketplace, that she'll say, "Go for it." In fact, about 6 months ago, I've been writing a writing craft book as well that's almost done. And I sent her a proposal for it. And she said, I can try to market this, but it's really a tough sell. And I said, what about if I self-publish it? And at that time, she said, I think that's going to probably be the best avenue for it. So she's very willing to allow me to go in that direction. She's also willing to vet any work that I have. And if it fits the market, then she'll sell it for sure.
So what you're describing is this sense, you talked about ownership of your legacy, of your material, the creations you've made. And what I'm hearing is this sense of, I've always said publishing is just a tool. It's just a tool to get books into readers' hands. Nobody actually wants to be published. What they want is their book to have an impact and to be in readers' hands. And so how we do that in some ways doesn't really matter. And people get so caught up in that piece of it. And what I'm hearing is you're about this is my work. This is work I love. This is work I'm proud of. This is work people like. I'm going to keep making that kind of work and then choose the right tool to get it into people's hands. Is that what it's feeling like?
That's exactly what it feels like. It feels like I no longer have this feeling like publishing owns me. No, I own my own work. I own my creative self, and I can send that creativity in the direction that is best for me. And that could be, a number of different directions.
Oh, Janet, that's so, I just get tingles listening to that. Before we get into the how of it, I don't want to move on too quickly from the dream that you had, because I just that moment is just really resonating with me. I want to ask, when you woke up after having that dream, did you write it down? Was it super clear? Were you ever going to forget it? Like, what was that like?
I immediately went to my computer and created a little temporary logo with an owl and a fox. And now I've got my designer who does such great work. She's creating a really nice logo for me. But I knew what it meant. I knew what it meant. I mean, it was a very short dream. It was nothing much to it except that this owl told me, "No, this is what you need to do. This is where it is."
And are you prone to have these kinds of dreams, or was that unusual?
That was pretty unusual, actually. I mean, I've had a few of them. I've had the dreams that I've had have been very instrumental in some of my creative work too. One of my best books, my favorite books, is Carry Me Home, and that came out of a dream. So yeah, it's but that moment was like I knew that I had to do this, and so I just stepped right into it.
Okay, so let's shift a little bit to the how. So the I noticed what you were doing when I happened to see something flash by on Instagram with the cover of the new book of Faithful, and it's really striking,
Thank you.
beautiful, modern, enticing cover. And you mentioned that you had gotten these rights back from Puffin. So what steps did you take? I mean, we could spend all day, but in general, your goal is to be in bookstores. So there's specific things you have to do in order to make that happen as a self-published author. Do you want to talk about some of the big decisions you made around the self-publishing journey?
Yeah, sure. The first thing after getting the rights back and having those rights, you have to have them in print. And so it's really important to keep that document somewhere. And I can say that now for a couple of reasons. One is I'm part of the Anthropic suit, and I had to have those rights pages, those letters from the publisher to send in with my application for the suit. So if you do this, be sure you keep a hard copy and a digital copy of those rights. The second thing is I needed a new cover because, of course, the cover, I don't own the covers to my books. So I went to someone we both know, Suzanne Dunlap. I said, "Suzanne, your book covers are so beautiful. Where do you get them done?" She said, "100 Covers, which is a company that's very reasonably priced. I've now worked with them 3 times, and I'm going to continue to work with them because they create wonderful covers. You can tell them not to use AI, which I'm very strict about." And you can give them a lot of feedback. They'll send you proofs, and you can say, "That's not quite right. Let's try this again. Here's something else." So they're very easy to work with. They know what they're doing, and they created now three. I'm really happy with all three covers they've created so far. So I'm about to send them on a whole new journey because I've got an old science fiction book that I self-published a million years ago that I've never done anything with. And that's a whole other side of the story that I can get into. But I'm going to create a new cover for that as well. So we'll see how they do with science fiction. But they did beautiful work with my son's science fiction. So there you go. So that's the
So
first
you,
step. It's go ahead. Yeah.
oh no, you go.
And so the second step is then to find the platform for getting it out there. And there are two sort of things to think about. One is the digital platform that, gets it into all the to gets it onto Amazon, gets it into Barnes and Noble, gets it onto Kobo. And this is the digital version. And for that, I use Draft to Digital, which is a very big company with a really great reputation. Now, Draft to Digital will also publish a book, a paper copy version of the book, which my son has done. The trouble with that is that they're not as good at getting those hardcover books, those copies, into bookstores. So I went for the moment with Ingram Spark, which advertises that that's what they do. They will get it into bookstores, they'll get it into libraries, and we'll see. I'm still sort of on the edge of that. So I did two things. I sent Draft to Digital to do the ebook version, and I went to Ingram Spark to do the paper or hardcover, because you can do both with Ingram Spark. There are other platforms out there like Ingram Spark that may or may not be better. I would like to refer your audience to a recent Jane Friedman article. I think it was on the 22nd of October, when she talks about how authors are driving sales of their own books, and everything she said is what I'm experiencing. And she talked
Okay,
about
I'll
other
link that.
plat Yeah, she talked about other platforms that are available to authors to get their books in print.
Yeah,
So,
I've done the same thing with my blueprint for a books, exactly what you've described. There's the digital path and there's the Ingram Spark path, and it works beautifully.
oh,
But
good.
you have a history of being in schools and working with teachers, and I saw on your website that you have a teacher's activity guide for faithful for teachers, librarians, homeschoolers, and book clubs. So you have the advantage of really knowing how these books get into readers' hands and
That's
what
true.
people need, and
Yeah.
you're doing that work you would have done if it had been with a traditional publisher, probably, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what I've learned about all of this is that, and especially in the last, since COVID, traditional publishers are doing a very not great, I'll put it that way, job of marketing and publicity. It's always been weighed towards the author to some degree to get their books out there. Now the way I feel about it, doesn't matter how, I mean, unless you're one of those, 0.1% of people writing books, you're just not going to get the marketing that you need to get a book out there. You've got to do it yourself. You've got to be vocal. You've got to be aware. You have to understand the market. You have to understand your readers. You have to understand who's going to buy the book, where it's going to land. So it's really hard for authors today, even traditional publishing, to get a book to succeed. It's very hard. I try to tell
Yeah.
that to the people that I coach or the people that I teach, because I don't want them to be disappointed when they finally have a book in hand and then they say, nobody's buying it, because
Yeah.
it's you have to do a lot of the work yourself.
Yeah, it's true. And some people are resentful of that, imagining that back in the day you just wrote and sat back and somebody else did everything for you. And I don't think that was ever true for most writers. It was true for some writers, but it really is, you really have to think of yourself as an entrepreneur and not just a little bit as an entrepreneur, really this is a business, and what are you gonna invest and what skills do you need to develop? So you talked about that part of your not being ready was the nervousness about, well, I have to learn all these new things and there's a lot to it and you have to figure it out. How did you approach that learning? Were you systematic about it? Like, I'm gonna spend X hours a week, or I'm gonna take this chunk of time. Like, how did you approach the learning of the skills you needed?
Well, one thing, and this is, it's such an interesting journey, because I've always thought traditional publishing has these long timelines. You send it to your agent, they spend 3 months reading it. You send it to your publisher, they spend a year dealing with this and
Yeah.
that. And there's a lot of back and forth, and there's a lot of wait. There's a lot of waiting. So I've gotten used to the waiting part of it. Well, there's a lot of waiting in this as well, because you send the ideas to say 100 covers, and it takes them, 2, 3 weeks to get back with a possibility, and you really can't move forward in draft to digital or Ingram until you get the cover, and you can't move forward in Ingram until you get the full cover. So there's a lot of waiting. So I've just partition this into, okay, you have to do this step, and then I'm going to go do the other things that I need to do, and then I'm going to go to the next step, and then I'm going to, it's the same kind of waiting, and I don't like to sit around and just wait. So I just do the steps as they come in.
And meanwhile, you're writing new things all the time, too.
I am. I've got another book that I just started drafting today. So.
Today, oh my goodness. And you've been sharing your journey of this ownership on Substack. Do you want to talk about what that's been like?
Oh, it's been fun. Substack, I've used a lot of platforms in the past, blogs, Medium, and when I found Substack, I just had a feeling that it was a great fit for me, and it is. because it allows me to write a short post, be informative, connect with people. It's got a nice connectivity to it. And I'm also getting compensated by some of my readers, which is really nice because, I am doing this work, but I'm doing it because I love to teach. And so I love to share what I'm learning. And people seem to appreciate that, and which is a really great feeling too. Yeah.
So we'll link to your Substack so people can follow along with this journey. But that work is not for getting the book into your readers' hands. That's more this teacher's activity guide. And are you planning school outreach, book club? How do you reach the teen book club market? What are you doing for those things?
That's always a that's a portion of being a kid lit author that's sort of different from being an author for adult readers, and I've been doing that all my career. So I have a booking agent, and she sometimes gets solicitations for me. I'm doing something in another week and a half with an Ohio library, for example, that came through her. The Mystery of Mystic Mountain being a statewide read has really opened up the avenues. I'm doing a lot of school visits with that book. And that every time you do a school visit, that kind of feeds a different it has a way of feeding out. Teachers will recommend you to other teachers, or they'll bring you back for another school visit when you have a new book. And I've been doing it for so long that I've really established a lot of connections around the country. I'm also part of some small kidlit groups like Spooky Middle Grade, and we do a lot of free virtual visits, and that also just helps to generate interest. And I go to a lot of conferences. I'm going to National Council of Teachers of English in November, and I'm on a couple of panels. And so those are the things that in kidlit, those are the things you have to do in order to connect with the audience, which is basically teachers and librarians. Yeah.
Oh, how is Faithful out? I'm not sure when we're talking today. Is it
Yeah,
launched?
it's launched. It's launched. It's launched in the paperback copy, and it's launched on all the digital platforms too. If you go to my website, you can see the links there. They can find it. I've got a link to the Ingram Spark hardcover or soft cover copy now, and I'm going to also create a hardcover version of it in case anybody likes hardcovers, which some people really do. And I'm actually considering opening a store on my website where I can promote the books and then generate the sales right through my website, which is another thing that Jane Friedman suggested in this article that I mentioned earlier.
Would
And
you
I
do
think
that
that's
through BookFunnel?
The thing I have to explore. BookFunnel is definitely an option. That's what she suggested, and so we'll see how I have to set it up. What's the easiest way for me to set it up? So.
Great. So in closing, I want to ask a few things. Is there anything that you would suggest for people who are inspired and want to do what you are doing? Any cautionary tales or things to look out for, ways to just your top off the top of your head, things to be aware of?
So be aware that Amazon's Kindle Direct Publishing is both a good thing and a bad thing, in that Amazon will promote the Kindle Direct Publishing books, and that's a huge platform. Obviously, it's the biggest platform in digital books anywhere. But they kind of own the book. And so it's very hard to take it to other platforms. And I started with Forgiven, as when I got those rights back, I put that book up on Kindle Direct, and it's still just sitting there. Now, I did just change the cover so that I have companion covers for these first three books, which is important. So then I can kind of promote them as a three book series, and that's going to help a little. But I'm not going to bring out a print Ingram Spark copy of Forgiven, because when they went out of print and there were all those copies hanging around, they sold a whole bunch to me for like 30 cents on the dollar. And
Oh, so
so,
like they're literally sitting in your garage. That's like the
they're
old
like
days.
literally sitting in my garage.
That's
So
amazing.
that's another reason to do this online store thing if I'm gonna do it, because I have a
That's
lot of copies.
amazing. And then the thing I like to leave our listeners with at the end of these sessions is some sort of action that they can do or reflection that they can take about the big idea that we've been talking about. And in this case, it's that idea of ownership and legacy. So I'd love to hear what, first of all, what do you want your legacy to be? Like you said, you want to own it. What, how would you articulate that?
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. That, as a creative person, I'm creating for myself first. And so that's important to me, to recognize that as this creative person, I would love to get my books, my work into the hands of readers, but there's no guarantee of that. And I think of things like, what comes to mind is F. Scott Fitzgerald and how he died before he saw the successes of his incredible work. And that's okay, because we love his work. We read his work, and the Great Gatsby lives on in spite of the fact that he's gone. And so I feel like it's a kind of immortality, if that's not treading too deep into something a little scary, but that's the way it feels. It feels like it's something I can be happy that I'm leaving behind.
It's beautiful. And what, so what would you suggest people do if they want to take steps toward feeling that or having something to leave or own? What, do you think it would start with an action or a reflection or a trying to get a sense of what they want their legacy to be? Like, what would you leave them with?
First, write if you're a writer, whatever artist you are, do the work from your heart. Do the work that's important to you. Don't try to follow trends or, whatever's going on out there. Do not lean on the traditional paths, because you don't have to anymore. It's everything is open to you to take ownership of. It doesn't matter what path you're on. Do the best work you can do. Have help, like a good book coach or a team or a beta readers that guide you. And then lean into your own work, lean into your own life, lean into your own creativity. Do it your way. Understand that it can be done your way. It doesn't have to be done the way everybody else does it. And it's if you are happy with the work, if you are proud of the work, if it comes from your heart and you're giving it your all, that's the only thing that's important.
Oh, what a beautiful place to end. Thanks for joining us,
Thank
Janet.
you. Thank you. Thank you.
And until next time, stop playing small and write like it matters.
The Hashtag Am Writing podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output, because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.